Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, your life connection to the information for a healthy body, an enlightened mind, and a renewed spirit.
Good morning, everyone. You're listening live with Calling All Leaders and Healers with host Barbara White. Barbara White is a gifted intuitive, holistic therapist, and spiritual teacher. She is the creator of the self-acceptance process and has a master's in transpersonal psychology and eco-psychology, diploma of homeopathy, and is a published author. Called the midwife to the soul, Barbara has ignited hundreds into knowing their inherent worth and facilitated the birth of their innate gifts. Barbara is the owner of the Accepted As I Am Center, certified in advanced auricular medicine, Shambhala master, Reiki master, Qigong practitioner, and is a black belt in Isshinryu karate. Her books, Why Self-Acceptance is So Powerful and Self-Acceptance Process and Magnificent You, are available on Amazon. Barbara's drive and passion to teach comes from knowing that if someone is willing to look within and grow, they can be a healer and a leader to others. So without further ado, I give you your host, Barbara White.
Welcome, everybody, to Calling All Leaders and Healers. That means you who are listening, you who will listen to this in the future, and you who have listened to it in the past. Yes, so when you are willing to look within and love yourself and love the crazy and love the humanity, you realize your divinity, that beauty, that love, that health, that is waiting to express as you. And so as a leader and a healer, which means to be a beneficial presence, to love yourself, to have an awareness of your mind, an awareness of your body, awareness of your emotions, and in that awareness, great magic, great miracles, great good happens. Last radio show, we had Michael Bernard Beckwith, the powerhouse teacher, presence, world changer, and the interview is, life-changing for me. I hope it was life-changing for you to be a platform for his message and his energy and to hear about what he has going on. You can check out his work at agapelive.com, agapelive.com. He does a really wonderful 6:30 in the morning. It's archived, but it's Pacific time, so it's actually airs at 9:30 if you want to do it live with him every Sunday. And then he does a lecture, which is igniting and inspiring. And then he has this Revelation conference coming up, which it's such an immersion. There's health classes, yoga classes, Melodoma Somme, he's speaking. There is such a power immersion buffet of goodness. And if you can't make it out to LA, he is live streaming that. And then he's also having a meditation retreat in April, which is also out in California, which is amazing. I love and adore his wife as much as him. She is just as much a powerhouse, Ricky Byers Beckwith. And she sings, and you sing and chant with her, and then you meditate, and then he talks, and they do this triage of activation with that, her singing, you meditating, him talking, and then you have the nature that surrounds the retreat. So please check out all that at agapelive.com, and then Michael Bernard Beckwith will be speaking in October here in Detroit at Renaissance Unity. So looking forward to that. I will be there if you want to come say hello. So again, welcome to Calling All Leaders and Healers. And we start from the place where we already are, knowing right where you are is perfect. In the place that you are, that your life is right on schedule. And the moment that you make peace with where you are, the moment that you begin to let go, your life begins to move. Such a paradox, right? The moment you stop resisting what is to change, the moment you accept yourself as you are, your life, you begin to transform into who and what you already are. Remembering, sweet one, that you're already whole, you're already complete, you're already healthy. And it's a letting go, a yielding, an opening up to let that emerge in your life. That too often we go ahead and we focus so much on the problem, so much on the pattern, so much on the issue that we really don't let the solution emerge. We don't let that good, that health that wants to happen, happen. and that we're really just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic rather than really moving into the next version of ourselves. Remembering that we cannot really teach love. We can't teach health. We can't become something that we already are. We're, you are, I am, already as God created us to be. As A Course in Miracles teaches, you are already here. You're already, you remain as God created you, whole, complete, and beautiful. And so it's a removing of the obstacles to that. And there's so many spectacular ways to remove those obstacles. Yes, listening to the show today, listening to my community leaders and wellness, on the leading edge of wellness, Diane DoVico, D-O-V-I-C-O. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. I'll have to check in with her. And then Michael Patrick Peters will be on later. Really excited to hear his story and what he's doing for Detroit and with the dance meditation technique. So knowing that there is good and there is love that wants to be born in, as, and through you, and there's so many tools, listening to the show, like I was saying, but also meditation, journaling, getting out in nature, working with a mentor, reading an inspiring book, spiritual study. It's never too late. In fact, let's have the intention of having 10,000 rebirths within one life. I was thinking of that today while I was running in Mayberry, and I was just feeling that rebirth, this, I don't know, my 5,000th rebirth within my own life. You can have a rebirth in your own life. You can be reborn into your own life. It's never too late. No matter how old you are, how young you are, what degrees you have or don't have, it is never too late. Whether you're in your 80s, your 90s, your 70s, whether you're a teenager, there is such good that wants to be born through you. And that the moment is right now, that today is your day. Today is your day. Not tomorrow, not next week. Not next week I'm going to do that. Today. Ask today how you can bring forth your joy, because your purpose is joy. Your purpose is you. Your purpose is to be yourself. And yourself is love. Yourself is beauty. And being yourself, sweet one, is more than enough. You begin to be yourself. You begin to know that every problem in your life is really a new way of becoming that wants to be born in you. Stop thinking it's about changing them, changing the problem, changing the condition. You truly are the answer. Michael Beckwith has a book that says the answer is you. If you want more of what I'm talking about, read that book. If you want to know why self-acceptance is so powerful, order my books online. They are quite amazing. Because self-acceptance is so darn powerful. I have seen thousands and thousands of sessions now where when people begin within and love themselves, what would be called miracles happen in their life. But they're really not miracles. They're the natural order of life. See, the natural order of things is that the seed becomes the tree, that becomes the apple, that becomes the seed again. The natural order is that you have miracles happening in your liver and in your heart, and that you breathe and there's this amazing conversion of carbon dioxide to oxygen. The natural order is that the embryo becomes the baby. See, natural order is miraculous. And when we don't have natural order or what would be called miracles in our life, we have removed ourselves from the natural order that wants to happen. And what I'm saying is no different than what many, many traditions say, right? In the Tao, they say it's just the way. It's the natural way. In natural health or naturopathic medicine, they're just returning someone back to nature. And that your natural state, your true nature, is not some evil or badness within you. There is no evil or badness within you. It's so damn arrogant to think we can separate from God. God is everywhere in its fullness and not in one place. Do you know what that means? That means if you accept God as omnipotent, omnipresent, which many traditions do, then anything else that says there's anything other than God in you is a bunch of bullshit. So just those, all that cultural teaching about bad in you, something's evil in you or sinful. Sin in Greek just means missing the mark. Sure, we make mistakes. Sure, we do We make mistakes and we can do cruel stuff to ourselves and others, no doubt. I know our humanity's history. But to say that we are fundamentally bad or there's something bad in us, it actually keeps people from doing self-acceptance work. So you can't surrender fully to love, to joy, to beauty. If you think there's some force you have to fight, there's some devil or force outside of you you got to fight. You can't surrender. You can't yield. See, remember I began this whole talk today saying that it's about a letting go and opening up. But if you think there's some force outside of you, you got to fight. You got to willfully push yourself through. That you don't believe in natural order. You don't think you're part of it. You don't think your body's part of it. You don't think your life is part of it. Then you've got to keep that resistance up. And that resistance, when I've worked with clergy, I've worked with people that maybe have a lot of too much mental training about being positive, that willful energy can actually keep somebody from that deep, orgasmic, juicy surrender to their own divinity, to their own body's wisdom. Sure, we all mentally get in our own way. I do, you do. We all are learning to get out of our own way. Absolutely. But that yielding, that opening up is a start, is where making peace with where you are. And then, yes, will is involved. We have to have a certain amount of focused will. But, boy, can that get in the way if that's your beginning point. Because we all have crazy. We all have humanity. We all have conditioning. We have to unlearn all the things that we've been taught, that we are limited, that there's something outside of us that will give us our happiness, that we need to do this or get that before we can truly bring forth our gifts in the world, that somehow your purpose is other than being yourself and your joy. Because if you bring forth your joy and who you truly are every day in your life, your purpose will sneak up on you, your unique expression. So we all have the purpose to be in joy and be ourselves. But that unique expression that is uniquely you, it will just show up. I promise you. I have helped mentor and teach so many people now that I've seen that happen. I can 100% confidently say that will happen. That will happen in your life. My guests today, Diane and Michael Patrick Peters, reason why I bring in these people on is because I see them living their gift. I see them shining. Diane is like a queen bee. The way she organized the Wellness Festival in Royal Oak, she just completely impressed the heck out of me, and not that she was trying to at all. And I just looked at her organizing all these healers and the wellness festival that I got to participate in and the honor of participating in, how she brought all those people together really, really impressed me. And I just was like, I want to know that. And then Michael Patrick Peters, he does a dance meditation, and how he organizes the 20-something and 30-something-year-olds. He really touches into them and what their desire to be of service, and really creates an amazing process called dance meditation technique. Also, he's a great lover of the earth, and so him and I have that in common in a big way. So today I'm going to bring on both those guests. Going forward, I'm going to have a format for Calling Out Leaders and Healers where I have local. I'm still going to host local healers and leaders. I really want to promote Detroit. We in Ann Arbor, we have such an incredible resource here. I don't know if you know that. Such an incredible resource of healers. And then I'm still going to promote national known healers. Marian Williamson is scheduled to go on the show in June. Yes, Marian Williamson, New York Times bestseller. I'm also looking to have Andrew Harvey, who is an incredible inspiration to me. He is such an activist. He's a sacred activist. His teachings have just touched my soul. I also have hopes of having Deepak Chopra on the show. I think his work is absolutely incredibly amazing. So I have this Marian Williamson, her and her publicist have been in contact, and then I have this wish list that I'm creating. And then I'm really just so excited of who I get to promote in the local Detroit area, because there's just so many people doing such great work on the planet. Also, please feel free to come out here every third Thursday, the self-acceptance gatherings and intuitive readings. You get to witness a live session. So if you've wanted to work with me and maybe finances have been rough for you, come have a live session with me every third Thursday here at Plymouth and Accepted As I Am Center. It starts at 6:30. Last gathering was amazing. I had so much fun. I can't even tell you how much fun I had. So every third Thursday, starting here at 6:30, please come out. It's only $45. You can have a live session with me, and it's incredible, quite incredible. All right, so let's bring on Diane. I'm going to read this bio to you, but again, just know she is a queen bee. Man, she's awesome. She's just another badass, awesome love light. And all right, so Diane, and I don't apologize, Diane, if I'm saying your last name wrong. Diane DeVico, a BA in education, certified prevention specialist, workplace wellness specialist, and executive director of the Royal Oak Community Coalition. Diane became interested in holistic care in 1977 when faced with a serious injury. Since then, she has studied complementary holistic modalities to sustain optimal health and strives to share this new field of lifestyle wellness in her work with the coalition. She is the architect of the Holistic Health and Wellness Expo, yes, definitely the architect, designed to link holistic practitioners with people seeking ways to integrate natural solutions into their own health care. The expo was structured to offer a day-long educational program for the general population focused exclusively on complementary practices. As a skilled social community strategist, yes, that describes her well. Diane creates opportunities to connect people to resources and tools so they may find doable and practical solutions to the challenges of every day. So without further ado, let's bring on Diane.
Hello.
Hello, Diane.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I am wonderful. Just celebrating the life divine and very excited about having you on today and hearing your story of awakening and maybe even getting osmosis or absorbing some of your community organization gift, because wowee, that just when I saw you at the Royal Oak Festival and saw what you had created, and the other thing that really impressed me was different than other festivals is it was really educational based. Like people were really, I kept on hearing that feedback over and over and over again of how people were learning so much by what you had put together. So I'm really grateful to have you on the show today.
Thank you for your recognition of the strategy I put behind trying to bring holistic modalities, complementary integrative medicine into the breadth of community. I've been... as I mentioned, since 1977, I happened to find an old article that I had in my files, and it was from 1977.
And wow, that's awesome.
Article, and I had circled it, and then I realized I have been self-care practicing holistic modalities since, and I am now of 63 years of age. You wouldn't know it by looking at me.
No, you would. Oh, my God, really? Yeah, you would not.
No, people think I'm sometimes 20 years younger, and I have the quality of that. I feel ageless, and I credit to that mindset that just like was a part of who I have always been. So in my work with the Coalition, which is a substance abuse prevention, I've been here for 21 years. I have used the angle of if we look at our own health and wellness and we learn about doable strategies, because we, I think, kind of gotten a little sloppy about our health and not paying attention and just kind of moving through our lives. I think we need to get back centered, and I want to help people find their own leadership in their health. Advocate it to a business or a doctor. Not that you don't use them for tools, of course we do, but you have to be strategic in your daily wellness and when you're challenging a health condition. I feel that we just can't let go to one physician and say, here's my condition, help me fix it, and leave all the responsibility on that one individual. Because if I had done that, I would have had my thyroid removed 20 years ago.
Oh.
Because I started to incorporate, because they wanted to, I had a thyroid disease. They wanted to remove it. They felt it was urgent that I did it. And I'm thinking in my head, you don't know who I am. That's not happening. And that's spun me into understanding and doing exploratory research on holistic modalities. So back then, I went to a Reiki master. And I did not know what Reiki was, but, you know, I was willing to try anything to get healthy, and meditating and changing how I was eating and changing my mental focus. Affirmations constantly about my thyroid perfectly. I just would not let go of those things because I wasn't going to let anybody take a body part out of me. Through the years then, and now I ended up in this position, I gave it a lot of thought about why people are abusing prescription drugs. And it's to feel better. It's to feel better, maybe emotionally. And they trip into it. What they don't also understand is how our brains get hijacked by the chemicals, creating an addiction. So I thought about what can we do to help people understand that they can mitigate their own emotional or physical pain. And I thought, well, holistic modalities. So I start, and the reason why it's such a dynamic expo is I reached out and went and visited or interviewed holistic practitioners to see if they were complimented what I was trying to do, which is educate the community about holistic modalities, because people find they're scared of it, they don't understand it, how does it fit in, is it a woo-woo, is it a placebo effect, what is this? And they don't want to spend money to go to someone, they are afraid to go to someone. So I decided that I'm going to put on an event to help link practitioners who can speak directly to the people who are coming in. And I also offered time, like TED Talks, 20 minutes, for practitioners to help explain their modalities. The other part of that is, so that's building awareness. And I feel I'm an advocate for the holistic movement. I'm not a practitioner. My job, I feel gifted to be that person to merge those two together from the public, because I understand how they feel and how they think, because I talk, I survey, I get a sense for what people are seeking, and then I bring those two together. So that's the educational piece, that people have to understand modalities in order to, A, feel safe to use them, and who do I go to? They don't know where to go. So this expo offers that opportunity. And in the first year I held it, I had 36 practitioners. And as you know, this last time I had 70. And the participation by the community, the first year that I had it, it was, what's holistic mean? And why are you doing this to? Why are you having it again? Can you have it twice a year? It was really incredible, the shift of social thinking about our self-care, and then we can take command of it, and we can make decisions for ourselves, and we can start asking the right questions, and we can start demanding that our culture incorporate holistic modalities and demand that our physicians, our therapists, bring in these modalities as suggestions or, you know, people can't afford it, so if our health insurance will pay for some of it, pay half of it, mm-hmm. pay for all of it, because the science is now there. So
mm-hmm.
my second part now, because the science is now there, we can start now moving into what's called political will, where people, the stakeholders, are now willing to, there's something here. There's something, this is not, this is something understandable, and now I've got data to refer to. So, for example, I had hired an art therapist in my office to work with kids because she helps kids work through issues. But she is not just like, she does all kinds of art therapy. It's not just, you know, drawing a picture. It's, she's very creative. And I sent her to the DEA this week. They had a art and health care. And they had CEOs there from hospital administrators listening to how art therapy helps patients reduce anxiety, reduce stress, reduce depression. Those are all blocks to healing. And they'll heal faster, and they'll come out of their health challenges stronger. They will have internal strength, and they'll have physical strength because they're looking at, how am I treating my body? I can. These are things I can do. They're not like, I can do these things at home, you know. So to me, that's really like the evolution I'm looking at for health care. Then also looking at how I can bring resources that are available and how I can find resources to bring more programming. So, for example, unfortunately, I had to turn down 40 practitioners who wanted to be part of the expo because we did not have room. So,
Oh, my gosh. Turned down 40. Yeah, that, just, that really just shows how the awareness has shifted and how you caught the the energy of that. You caught the flow of that. You caught what you caught the need of the you matched the need of the community with the gift that you had to offer, and that need and that gift, and then you now turning going from 30 to what is wellness to having now 70 and having to turn down 40. Wow.
It was, and it was, I'll tell you, those were the most difficult phone calls to make. I mean, I wanted actually to sob on the phone telling, but I have to tell you, because I've been working in a social health field for a long time, the response from the practitioners, every single one was, well, if it was meant to be, it would have been, thank you, put me on the list for next year. I was so incredibly with the response I was getting, and I'm like, this is really a great field to be a part of because I really like that, because I was so distraught making the phone calls. But here's how I try to turn it around. I called our local library, and I said, I'd like to put on a five-part series starting in April 20th, to go through May 18th, and have two practitioners every Wednesday night, and give them 40 minutes to do a presentation about their particular modality. And they didn't have to pay a booth fee. Everything is free. The library's free. The practitioner opportunity to present was free. So we are in this week, tomorrow, going into session two. We had 30 people come, and they all came to me and said, thank you so much for putting, this is fabulous. This is information I needed. And I have to tell you, I feel so good inside. Mm-hmm. I know I'm following my path, my second career choice as of end of September is to be completely involved in the movement of holistic modalities and integrating it into our normal social lifestyle. Go into a business, and the business says, we have a yoga program here, If we have a meditation room, we have a room for you to rest for 20 minutes so you can recharge your mental, emotional battery.
Mm-hmm.
It should be a part of what we do on a normal basis. And there is some change. I'm very happy to see it. And it's coming from the big companies that cater to the millennium lifestyle. And I think the millenniums are going to help us change all that, and I'm really excited about that. Bringing dogs to work is already known to change the atmosphere of the office itself, because we do this to ourselves. We become so stressed and so worked up, and we forgot how to breathe. We forgot how to, like you've been saying, turn it over so things work out. You know, let the dust settle. Just sit and things will work out. And I wanted to mention something, because people don't really understand the concept, but here's something I've been doing for years. During the change of season, like when you pack up your winter clothes or you pack up your spring clothes, I always write myself a note about where are you today? Where are you going to go? Break down the three or four things of where I'm at right now. Sometimes there are things that are very painful of where I'm at. And some things are like, well, I'm trying to start this movement. I'm trying to start this. Where is that going to go? And I shove it in my clothes. And 6 months later, you know, when you get your new wardrobe out, that note is there. And I do, you know, I don't remember exactly what I write down. And it's like, wow, in 6 months, so much has changed. And I think writing it down, so sometimes the things that were painful and hurtful changed. And sometimes things that I'm trying to work toward have already manifested. So then I've learned you got to let all that, like you don't have to get all tight inside. You can meditate through that. You can be asking for your spirit guide. You can be asking for whatever the word is. It can be Holy Spirit. It can be your internal energy source. Whatever that is for you can transfer the issues into your walk. This is your walk to learn. Like you said, it's your walk to learn. It's your walk for being rebirthed. And for me, I learned about the rebirthing by my notes that I would send myself every 6 months. So it's been, it helped me change moving from worry to saying, well, things are going to work, because this is just a process. These are just circumstances. This is not always going to be here. So those are some of the things that I wanted to.
What a great practice to put into your life, and that to actually show yourself that things do pass, to show yourself that things do change. Even though we hear that, we need those practices. And the workshops that you mentioned at the Royal Oak Public Library, those are those started April 20th, right, and they go to May 18th. And if people want to sign up for that, they go to www.ropl.org, so www.ropl.org. It's at the Royal Oak Library. You can also call 248-246-3727 to register. And it looks here for additional information. I will be posting this on my Facebook page as well, so you can look at that. You can go to www.facebook.com/Royal Oak Community Coalition. And if someone wanted to approach their doctor or their business, and they wanted to be a leader and a healer in their life, Diane, what would be, as we're getting to the last couple minutes of the interview here, what would be your words of advice to them? What would you say, like, because they're scared, they feel like maybe they still were a generation where the doctor was God, or they're scared of, like, being the weirdo at work. What would be your words of support and for them to step into more of a leadership or healer role in their own life and with their doctor or with their work? And maybe that's two separate words of advice, but with their doctor and then with their work. What would you say to them?
Well, I have exactly been in those situations. Like with my thyroid, for example, I went to even staff of endocrinologists, and I had gone to a holistic, I mean, actually it was then called alternative physician, who was also a Beaumont doctor. And I have to say that the endocrinologist was really surprised in how my thyroid hormones were changing. And I said to him, well, this is what I've been doing. And, you know, I'm all excited because he's given me really good news. And his eyes glazed over. He didn't want to know. He didn't care. He wasn't listening to me. And I thought, okay, I'm on to something for myself, and you are just not in a place of understanding yet. So just let that go and maybe continue finding a physician that understands where you're going through. Maybe you need a couple physicians. You still want to go to the chief and staff endocrinology, but then you find like a functional medicine doctor who's willing to listen to you. So I think, and at the workplace, during lunch, start talking about you're taking a meditation class or you're taking a yoga class and start feeling people out about, because people are starting to shift, and I think people are going to start saying, yeah, I do that too. Now you got an ally. And then you can allies within the workplace, because actually you can start the conversation, but it's the second person that you bring along actually helps fortify your leadership, because now you've got an ally to help support you and bring in other people. So everything is in incremental steps. You're not going to go in there and change it. You have to know that all social behavioral changes are done incrementally. You have to be patient, but you have to keep at it in measures that people will accept. So that's my suggestion.
Oh, what powerful, powerful words to lead with compassion with the doctor and understanding that he or she just doesn't understand, but at the same time to go towards, to maybe have a couple doctors and that functional medicine doctor or the DO or somebody that's going to work with you. And then I love just what you said about going to work and that beginning to take those little risks of reaching out for allies and kind of dropping seeds and seeing who's on that path with you. And then, oh, my God, Diane, just that every can you say that last sentence again? Every change is incremental, or every just not social? Say that sentence
all
again.
Behavioral change is incremental. So, you know, I had some people say, I'm really frustrated. I go to these conferences about holistic, and we're not doing this. And I said, your frustration's fantastic because you are at the helm. You are at the helm of social change. That's how it's supposed to go for you. So you keep going on and educating, because we are here to change this culture, but it's going to take some time, as all social change does. So it's ignited you inside. Good. Keep it positive. Don't get depressed. Don't get upset. What you have to do now is to say, what next step can I do to help move the ideas, to help move people? And, you know, those opportunities, as you start thinking differently, will come. They will come. Like what I've been doing is all of a sudden I like put two connections together. Like I find out, like, you know, people in mental health treatment, they don't understand at this point how modalities work. Like, oh, okay, I can start forming programs, giving them CEU credits, so they're going to want to come for the CEU credits, and start how these modalities fit in so your client can be more open to change and start feeling better psychologically, emotionally, and spiritually. Then they're more open to seeing, they get out of their own way. Like you said, getting out of your own way. But you have to come with an internal peace about yourself, like you mentioned before. Those are really, and that's what that therapist can do for them. So,
So Diane, if someone wants to get in contact with you, how do they do that?
They can call our office, or they can go on our website. I'll just say go on our website, because we have our posters on there about the holistic programs and things that we do. That's www.romi.gov/ROCC. So I'm just going to conclude with one little comment. Because our federal funding will have now come to its completion after I've been here 21 years, And we are reducing to, we're going to have, I believe, the art therapist stay on. I am looking for that platform so I can carry on this mission, carry on the activities that I have put in place. So I am going to be reaching out to practitioners and reaching out to the holistic community to help partner with me to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. I'm there with you, sister, ready to rock and roll.
Yes, I think you should tell your listeners that you're one of the practitioners that I'll be speaking at our wellness practice.
Oh, I will. I'm gonna repeat that information for them to sign up, and I will. And I'm so grateful that you came on today. Such an incredible living example, and really doing your work on the planet and helping so many. So I just deep bow and deep thanks for what you do and who you choose to how you choose to walk in the world.
Thank you so much, and you know, thank you for allowing me to come on air and discuss it with people because it excites me so much. And if anything comes up and you want to get in touch with me, I'll be glad to be there or do whatever.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Have a great day. Thank you.
I will. Bye-bye. So you can go and sign up for the classes that are going to be happening at the Royal Oak Public Library. There's my dear friend Dory that's going to be doing chakra healing on May 11th. There's essential oils. Oh, the sweetheart, Suzanne Gozette. There's so many on May 18th. April 27th, this Wednesday, is Mindset to Transform Toxic Relationships. Oh, we know nothing about that, right? We've all got perfect relationships. And then May 4th, which will be next week Wednesday, I will be presenting on Awakening Your Gifts, and I'm going to be giving simple processes and powerful teachings to awaken your gifts, and that's through alignment of your mind, your body, your emotions, and your sexuality. And that will be May 4th from 6 to 6:40, and then art therapy after that. So Erin Shali will be presenting art therapy. So again, you can go to 248-246-3727, www.ropl.org, and please check that out. All right, so I'm so excited to bring on my next guest. This has been a long time coming. He has been a long time friend, and I have just watched him glow and grow and flourish. He is a father and a green business entrepreneur of 15 years building and designing gardens, transformational events, apparel, branding, and innovative businesses, concepts, and also an artist, a musician, a poet. His pen names are Bakshish and, I don't know if I'm going to say this right, Michael, Toshim, T-O-S-H-I-M, two names given to him by some of his first spiritual teachers. He's been a student of many spiritual paths, including Tibetan Buddhism, Qigong, Zen Buddhism, various yogic paths, Christianity, and more for more than 17 years. And he's had the rare opportunity to learn from Ama, Master of Tibetan Buddhism, Gelek Rinpoche, Dr. Aura Glacier, Master Gabriel Chin, and one of his senior and one of his senior most students, Anad Safai. Anad Safai. As a young man, he had deep experiences with suicidal depression, anxiety, panic, and an unshakable sense of utter meaningless. Wow, I know a lot of people can relate to that. And he spent time in mental hospitals, drug rehabs, and did a stint in a lockdown facility. So he has come a long way as a community leader, creator of dance meditation, helping Detroit, helping the earth. He studied the ancient principles of wise living taught through his unique modernized platform or the unique hybrid of dance meditation technique. And experiencing dance meditation technique, it is such a powerful, awesome process. It is dance and then some. It is meditation and then some. I've also seen Michael just really, as I don't know if he had, I want him to hear that I had said this early on, just really open and connect with the 20 and 30-something-year-olds and really allow them a way to access the deeper parts of themselves. So I really appreciate his work in that. So let's bring on Michael Patrick Peters.
Hey, Barbara.
Hi.
Thanks for the sweet introduction.
Oh, well, I meant every word that I said. I'm really grateful, happy to see how you are just making a difference in the world and reaching a lot of people and that may have not had the access point into who they are otherwise. And so thank you for your work on the planet.
Well, thank you for yours, and thanks for inviting me on. Ever since I found out that you had this show, I'd wanted to be on it, and it was really sweet that you I had just had the thought the day before you asked me. I saw that you're interviewing Michael Beckwith, and I thought, oh, I really want to be on her show. And then the next day, you sent me an email. So I feel like it's really, really very sweet timing.
One mind, my friend. One world, one mind. Absolutely. So you came from such – I did not know that you – I mean, you had fires of initiation or that they say in shamanism, that shamanic initiation early on in life. I didn't know that you came from such a transformational place.
Yep. It's remarkable that I made it out alive. Some of my friends didn't, and some of them made it out alive – but are really working, still really, really working hard to recover from what happened. And I was just extremely, extremely lucky to get out of that situation and end up in the care of some very, very loving people. And then ultimately some very loving people and then some extremely wise people. And for whatever reasons, It was a very big contrast between what happened when I was a young man and where I'm at today.
So you're able to really look at the, because apathy is the, I feel like the biggest thing that people are suffering from. Maybe second would be loneliness, but you're able to look at that feeling of utter meaninglessness that you said and really see it with a sense of visceral understanding of what people are going through and that that it's possible to get out of that.
Yeah, that meaninglessness came to me when I was very young. I remember actually feeling it like as if it was a substance that was like around me. And very, very strange, but I remember sitting on my bed and just being overcome by it. And now looking back on it, I realize how much sense that makes. I mean, if you touch a hot stove, your body and your mind go, ow, don't do that again, hot. You know, you get a pain reaction. So when you encounter meaningless living, the natural response is a profound sense of pain and meaninglessness. Mm-hmm. And the way that our traditional culture is kind of platformed really lends itself to feelings of meaninglessness.
Mm.
So that sense of meaninglessness that a lot of us have is a natural, intelligent response. just like the stove is hot, it did burn you, and what you're experiencing is a sense of meaninglessness. Luckily, some of us bump into other teachings that help us see that meaninglessness is an empty, it's impermanent, it has no inherent existence.
Mm-hmm.
It's not its own truth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's well said that it's not its own truth, and that it if you don't sit there and surround yourself with a bunch of protection over your hands and your face and your and then keep on touching the hot stove and keep on putting all these shields up so that you can keep on touching the meaninglessness and that you actually, I love that what you're bringing forth, that the meaninglessness is a sign that there's something greater.
Yeah, and I like what you said about the shields that we put up to protect ourselves from it. That's the callousness that develops. So, you know, you encounter the meaninglessness, then the callousness begins to develop, and then a sense of deadness. You know, you're living, but you're really not alive. And there's no deep feeling anymore. There's no deep laughter. There's no juicy tears. You know, this can happen to some people. It seems to be very common in the West. I've never really had any experience outside of America. I'm very limited in my worldliness. But at least within the circle that I've grown up in, this seems to be very, very common, almost an epidemic.
An epidemic. Yeah. And in your story of awakening and coming out of that and learning so many different forms of healing, Qigong, working with the earth and Buddhism, how did dance meditation technique come to be born?
Well, it's a long story, so I'm going to give you the most abbreviated version possible because I know we don't have a ton of time. But so there was that experience of meaninglessness as a kid, right? So that was there, among other things. But like a lot of us, we can find some temporary meaning that motivates us, like, you know, having a great dinner at night or becoming wealthy or gaining the things that we want. Yeah, so that could help counteract and give some motivation. When I was 18 or 19, somewhere in there, my grandmother on my mother's side died of brain cancer, and she passed pretty quickly. From the time we found out she had it to when she passed was just a few months. And I was really fortunate to have some intimate time with her as she was on her bed. You know, she had been at hospice. I'm sorry, been at the hospital, and then she came home to pass in her home, which was a really great way to go for her. So hospice was there, and I got to sit by her bedside, and we had a lot of really profound talks. But something very, very strange happened at that time. And, you know, the only way I can explain it is that I had something like an experience of impermanence. So you hear about the realization of impermanence. I used to talk about it before, you know, like, hey, we all die, everyone dies, you know, this happens, we all die, whatever, blah, blah, blah. We talk about it casually. But it had moved from a discussion, a conceptual understanding, to complete, unshakable realization that at any minute, any of us are going. Right there at her bedside, I lost all sense of this illusion that there was time. We had time. Well, you're a young guy. You have a lot of time. Well, you know, Barbara, you're only 26. You have all this time ahead of you. And this was gone. And it was accompanied with very, very uncomfortable physical sensations. You know, and then I read later on about Kundalini awakenings and things like that. Maybe that was it, but it was incredibly uncomfortable, and it went on for years, and like new sensations in the body, and I had this ability that came with it. I could see how everybody was pretending that this impermanence thing wasn't real, and how we were trying to defend ourselves from it, and that at the core we were all profoundly terrified. You know, it was like, yeah, I know I'm going in a tough place here, but this is important. It was as if I had witnessed the death of everything I loved in one moment. And I knew that it would all pass. That produced a second kind of meaninglessness feeling, but one that was unsoothable. It was clear to me, like, at that time, like, I didn't see any way that this could be soothed. It was a type of mental anguish that was beyond unbearable. But because in my earlier life I had tried suicide and luckily that didn't work, I also had this not knowing that dying wasn't going to help it. That wasn't going to end it. It wasn't like that would make it better. And I was really lucky. Someone gave me the book, The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying by Sogyal Rinpoche. And when I read that book, all of my tears, and I cried almost every day for a year, like hysterical, uncontrollable crying. And luckily I was in the care of some people who didn't try to institutionalize me again or drug me out of it. Because
most of the times that spiritual opportunity is lost through the drugs. Yeah. Yep.
You got it. Yeah. Yep. And so when I read that book is the first moment when the tears of despair transformed into tears of gratitude. And it was as if I was reading something that had been in my heart my whole life, but I could never explain. And there it was, an entire culture, an entire civilization that lived based around these teachings. And that talked and spoke of the very things I was experiencing. And that set me on the path that the only point in life was to become enlightened. That was clear. Like, there was no, no longer the material gain thing had any ability to soothe me, because I knew it, I knew at any moment I was going to die.
Yeah.
So, like, that's not coming with me. So I need to find out this other thing. And that led me on the path to end up meeting my first teachers. I don't know how much time we have. I could just keep rambling. So let me know.
No, you are not rambling at all. That point at which I think we have at least 5 minutes, 5 or 6 minutes, that point at which you touched where you realize the only purpose in life is to become enlightened. My framing of it is the only purpose in life is to be with the presence of God. And then of course in Christianity they say seek first the kingdom of heaven and all else is added onto you. Like that's a point. I get that. That's a point my life took off as well. And so then the story that led up to it, I think that's very inspirational and life-changing for people to hear. So not rambling at all, my friend.
Yeah, very well said. And those reframings of it, totally accurate. Same thing, saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why in a lot of in the Tibetan tradition in particular, they have this really strong focus on bringing a lot of awareness to impermanence. Because for people who are trying, for people who are trying to gain spiritual growth, that's pretty much everything before that is leading to that. And once you hit that door, now you're all the sufficient energy needed to go beyond it will come. Because once you realize that impermanence thing is unavoidable and absolute, that produces the urgency to find the presence of God, or the other ways that you format it, or as they say, enlightenment.
And I love that you said that you had that period of discomfort, because that when you're going through the birth canal of that, which is normally when I've worked with people, it's usually a 1 to 3 year period. That's the time that you can either go forward and let that little sprout become a little tree, or you can drink it, medicate it, addiction it away. Where you're like, oh my God, my entire world isn't real. My entire everything I thought that made me is a bunch of BS. And you made it through that other path. And so then how did you come to this dance meditation technique, which has helped hundreds of people? How did that come forward?
Well, and I've gotten at this point now roughly around 5,000 people have practiced this. In the past 5 years, yeah. And it came about, in short, I was doing a tremendous amount of sitting meditation. So I was studying the Tibetan path. I was studying the Zen Buddhist. Every day, you know, when that urgency struck me, it was like all-consuming. And so hours a day I would try to sit and meditate and just eat white rice with a little bit of soy. And, you know, every night when I went to bed, I'm trying to bring my meditation into my sleep. This wasn't like a manic, like urgent, you know, because at any minute I was going to die, right? That's what's going on in my mind. And that really actually never left. But it has become more integrated and less upsetting. So it was very difficult to do these sitting practices. A tremendous amount of agitation would arise. Also, a lot of insight was coming, but it was very difficult. And when I met my first teacher, and the way that her name is pronounced is Anand Sathy.
Thank you.
Yeah, and she was a senior student of Gabriel Chin, who, as you know, very, very well-known and well-respected Qigong teacher in Ann Arbor for over 40 years. And we have a mutual friend, Sang Kim, who is really holding his work up in Ann Arbor right now at sunshen.org. I'll give a shout-out to Master Kim out there, who's doing great work with that. So Sathy was a student of multiple disciplines, dance, Osho active meditations, Shivananda yoga, Qigong, Tai Chi. She had a whole tool belt full of things. And she was the first one that introduced to me over the course of 3 years, bringing activity to meditation. Every one of her classes was totally unique. No two classes were the exact same. And that's when I started to have very, very, the discomfort of the energy opening that I mentioned, and as you pointed out, which is very helpful for whoever's listening, you know, I'm willing to guess most spiritual awakenings, like when people say, well, we're awakening, if you're awakening to truth, the first thing you're going to awaken to is tremendous suffering.
Mm-hmm.
That is very difficult. And maybe other people have other experiences, I don't know. But so that Kundalini experience was extremely painful, very, very painful for a long time. But when I started working with her, it started to become incredibly beautiful, incredibly beautiful.
In case we do get cut out, I do want people to be able to reach you. So how can they reach you, Michael?
So go go to the website dancemt.com, like dance meditation technique, dancemt.com. You can see upcoming classes. I teach every Sunday at the Scarab Club in Detroit, which is Detroit's oldest arts institution, and that's at 10 a.m. every Sunday morning. And you can see other events. And then you can email me, michael@dancemt.com.
Okay. All right. It might cut out. It might not. So that's dancemt, dance with M and a T .com. And they can also email you at, what was that email again?
Michael, michael@dancemt.com.
All right. So they have that information, and I just want to hear the remaining of the story. So you were dancing with her, and the Kundalini energy, became less painful,
yeah.
And then...
Well, yeah, it's all very super abbreviated, but I can tell you the exact moment when I realized the very essential principle of the technique. So if you went to one of Safi's classes today, and then you went to one of my classes tomorrow, you wouldn't know how I got what I do from what she does or what she did. But if you went to 100 of her classes and then you went to one of mine, it would make perfect sense. So it was on a retreat at Song in the Morning, actually, and there was only three of us. It was Sapi and I and another woman. And we were doing this practice. And I remember thinking, like, well, God, there should be more people here. That was, you know, like, why aren't there more people? Just three of us, like, you know. And she looked at me, and she knew what I was thinking, and she said, so if your attention's within, how many people are here? And it was like, you know, that just like that hit me really clearly. So for the rest of the weekend, So for the rest of the weekend, I was locked in, and there was a moment where I was dancing in the main domes during one of our practices, and the type of joy, it just occurred to me. No one's watching me. I'm not watching them, and it was like a waterfall, an inward waterfall pouring in, and it was so joyful. It was like almost unbearably joyful. Like it was like painfully joyful, and that didn't continue on. You know, it came and then it went. But in that exact moment, I would say is when dance meditation technique was born. It took 10 years from there before I ever got to a place where I was capable of really clearly seeing it, formulating it, and presenting it. But it was born in that exact moment.
Wow, what an amazing experience. And then those words that I'm going to write that down. If your attention is within, then how many people are here? Because I have seen times when I've hosted groups or community groups, and my brain is sitting there counting, oh, okay, how many people are here? And why isn't there more people here? But if your attention is within, then how many people are? Oh, wow.
She really protected me with that one, because ever since I first began, and you were right there at the very beginning when I first started doing these, and I approached every evening with as long as three people are here. And that's how it's been the whole time. And then I noticed a lot of the holistic practitioners like us, you'll notice coming up in your mind, you start getting focused on numbers. That's something that should be seen as like a major thing to avoid, like someone trying to break into your house and steal your spiritual practice from you. Like that thought, you know, you see it, it's there, but do not feed it. You know, if no one shows up, you do your practice. And if you have a good practice, then the benefit's still there.
Yes. 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 Well spoken, my friend. That's if no one shows up, do your practice, and then your practice is still there. Yes, yeah. Those are such powerful words. Well, I wish we did have more time, but I'm grateful that we were able to spend this 20 minutes or so hearing your story. And you can go on dancemt.com and please check out Dance Meditation Sunday morning out at the Scarab Club. You can go to the practice at 10 a.m. And I will be out there. I do have intentions to get out there, and so my butt needs to be out at that practice, and I'm going to do it.
It's so cool to see your show blossoming and to see you growing with what you're doing. And I really appreciate the opportunity you've given me to share and the opportunity you're creating for a lot of people to be heard and seen. And I wish you everything wonderful with what you're doing, Barbara. And, you know, we will definitely see each other soon enough.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Michael.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, just a quick closing, everyone. Thank you to Diane. Thank you to Michael. Just incredible resources of good here in Detroit. There's so much love. There's so much good here for you. There's so much love in your life for you. And that story that Michael told of his awakening and how he moved, I just can feel how many people that helped. I'm so excited, so happy for that. And how many people are being helped by Diane and her incredible gift and awareness of how to reach people in their wellness and in your work, and that it is possible to be a leader and healer by following your joy, by following what brings you to life. And Michael and Diane are both living examples of that. What leaders, what healers. You can also go and check out my work at barbarawhite.com, B-A-R-B-R-A, just six letters, white.com. And I'd love to see some of you at the third Thursday. Many blessings, much love. And hope to hear from you or see some of you in person. Take care. Bye-bye.